Jay from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
Hello, Darren Patterson. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, sir. You and yours. New Year, new nerds, new us. Everything's brand spanking new. It's going to be great. Wonderful, lovely. Everything's right as rain, ship shape, tip top. It's all gravy.
Everything's peachy.
That's right. No problems in the first week of the new year. Not at all. Nope. Nuh-uh. I don't know where you get that news.
Just a quiet Saturday that we're recording this on.
Yep. Oh boy.
What war in Venezuela? What?
Not what?
What?
Don't know what you're talking about. Everything's Everything's fantastic.
But hey, let's get away from news about potential world war by watching a movie about potential world war.
Holy shit, I didn't even realize that. Oh my God. How did we do that?
We're psychic, I guess.
Wow, I didn't even... Oh shit, all right. Well, all right, here we go.
Yeah, well, this'll take us out of the news.
Yeah, because we were like, oh, it's the first week of January, which is, Sherlock Holmes' birthday. So right. January 6th. And, never forget. And then we did the first Sherlock Holmes movie last year. So we figured this year we'll do the sequel to the Guy Ritchie film, Sherlock Holmes, Game of Thrones. And that would be Game of Shadows. Oh, Jesus Christ. Game of Shadows. So we thought, oh, this will be a nice light diversion from the current events, and not so much.
But you know, hey, this involves a world war without South America in it. So you know, completely different thing.
Totally different thing. So yeah, so to celebrate Dr. Sherlock Holmes, we're talking about
Dr. Sherlock Holmes. What the hell?
Is he not a doctor? Is he not?
He's not a doctor. No, no. Doctor is Watson.
All right, I apologize.
Yeah.
So we're doing Sherlock Holmes, A Game of Shadows, directed by Guy Ritchie, written by the couple Michelle Mulroney and Kieran Mulroney. Kieran is the brother of Dermot Mulroney. Before this, they've
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. And they also wrote the Power Rangers movie.
And great.
Yeah. And Paper Man, that movie with Jeff Daniels in it, I believe.
I'm not familiar.
It's like Ryan Reynolds in it as well. So, this movie came out December 16th, 2011. Had a budget of 125 mil, made 543 mil. So, not too shabby. But I do remember when this movie came out, like it got mixed reviews.
Yeah, it was more mixed reviews than the first one. I think the first one was generally better received than this. But it did do well enough that they were planning a third one. But that got kind of stuck in development hell.
Mm. Yeah, so. I can see it. And the way it ended, it definitely opened it up to a third one as well. But I don't know. But yeah, I mean, you're the Sherlock Holmes aficionado. Like, what are your just overall beginning thoughts on this film? Like, the introduction of Moriarty... how much of this kind of sticks to the lore of Sherlock Holmes? Did it take any, did they mess around?
I would say short answer, hardly at all.
Okay, got it.
There are things in there. I mean, it takes liberties. I think it's fair to say. I haven't seen this since it was in theaters. I did some research. I found my old, Facebook status from when I saw this. I apparently saw this on February 5th, 2012. Haven't watched it since. But here's the review that I put up on Facebook. And I've also since put it up on my Letterboxd page because I think it's funny.
Okay.
So here it is in its entirety. Screw you, Guy Ritchie. I hope I get to kick you in the nuts someday for the 2 hours and $11 you just took from me. So, yeah, I was not a fan of this. So it was interesting to revisit it. I was kind of, well, I wouldn't say I was dreading it. That's overstating it. But I wasn't really looking forward to seeing it again, because I remembered some of the dumb things they did, but I mainly remembered how much I didn't like it. Mm. And I knew my opinion wasn't going to change that much. So, okay.
All right. No, fair enough. I mean,
this time around, I wasn't so much enraged. I was just more bored. So I guess that's progress.
There you go. Look at you learning. I guess I was the same way a little bit. Like, somebody who is, I appreciate Sherlock Holmes, but I'm not like a diehard fan. I don't know the whole lore and backstory and everything. But, you know, I appreciate a good movie. Yep. And, after watching this film, like, I thought it was okay, but I understand it definitely has a lot of flaws here and there. And, I mean, there's one, I don't know, I guess we'll spoil it, I guess. But there's like the death of Irene Adler. I thought, like, I wasn't too.
I really like Rachel McAdams a lot in general, and I really liked her in the first film. And I was definitely disappointed to see her killed off so quickly in this one. I mean, she basically just has a cameo role, and they kind of kill her off just to show how high the stakes are.
Right. I believe the term is fridging in the comic world.
Yes. That comes from, there was a character, Kyle Rayner, who took over as Green Lantern, and he had a girlfriend, Alex, in his first few issues. And then he comes home at the end of one issue and he finds her body like cut up and she's like stuffed in the fridge. And that, you know, again, just to show how bad the villain is. And that became Gail Simone, who later became a comic book writer. She started a site called Women in Refrigerators that was just kind of about how often female characters or love interests or whatever are just like unceremoniously killed off or something traumatic happens to them just to motivate the male characters.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that whole, cause like she was a pretty big deal in the first one. And so just to have, like you said, have her kind of shuffled off like that, you know, unceremoniously. It's like,
it's disappointing. Yeah. Cause she was a fun character. You know, again, they took a lot of liberties with what Irene Adler was in the stories. Irene Adler only appears in one Arthur Conan Doyle story, but there have been like a series of novels that have been written about her by, Carol Nelson Douglas, and I've read like the first three or four of them, and they were pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, like, I didn't like the female lead in this movie as much. Like, Noomi Rapace, she just does nothing for me as an actor. I just find her very bland, you know?
Right, yeah, she was kind of... I don't know. Like, I remember for the longest time, like, it seemed like Hollywood is trying to make Noomi Rapace, like...
Oh, is that how you say it? Noomi? Okay.
Or Noomi? I don't know.
I don't know.
Like, Klaus Noomi? I don't know me. Yeah. But however you say her name, yeah, I remember her just kind of popping up in a lot of movies for a while.
Noomi Rapace, she did seem to be, like, the big thing for a while in, like, the early... In the late 2000s, early 2010s, and she was in everything. She was in like a couple of Alien, Prometheus movies. She was in this. She was in Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Yeah. So I don't know. She just hasn't done anything for me in the movies I've seen her in. So I'm just not too horribly impressed with her. You know.
No, I hear you. I think she was pretty well regarded, pretty well liked in the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, but yeah, after that it was just kind of nothing really kind of popped, I guess.
And you were saying that, you know, you didn't think she had much chemistry with Jude Law and Robert Downey Jr. in this movie, and you know, like, admittedly there's no sort of romance here,
right?
Because, you know, Watson gets married over the course of the film, so obviously he's unavailable, and
right,
Sherlock Holmes, the closest thing he had to a love interest was Irene Adler, and she gets killed off. So, yeah, there's no real romance going on, but there's not much of a bond or a relationship. She's just kind of the person who kind of gets mixed in with this because her brother is embroiled in the scheme. And
right. Yeah. Like, I mean, there's no romantic chemistry, you know, not all chemistry has to be romantic, but there should be some like good, you know, friendship chemistry or rivalry chemistry or yeah, just something.
Yeah.
Like, the person Moriarty, Jared Harris. Jared Harris. Yeah.
He's a son of Richard Harris, by the way.
Yes, of course. The great Richard Harris. But yeah, him and Downey as Sherlock, they have good chemistry. Like, I thought they had good back and forth, too.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I like the way Jared, like, kind of portrayed Maury. I would have wanted to see a little bit more of him. Like, I thought, like, when they introduced the character of him, I thought it would have been, like, more of a big reveal. But I mean,
yeah, because like in the first movie, you see Moriarty in shadows a few times and they're just kind of like a tease, you know, like, oh, we're going to have Moriarty in the sequel. And then, I think the plan was we cast a celebrity of some kind as Moriarty. There was like talk of like Brad Pitt playing Moriarty.
Whoa.
At one point, which would have been wild.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
That's
kind of odd, right?
Kinda.
I mean, we already have an American as Holmes, and we have another American as Moriarty. That might tip the scales a little too much.
A little bit.
Do we want to go through this thing beat by beat because it's a very convoluted plot?
Yeah. Like I kind of had trouble following it a little bit. Well, I mean, and we began in 1891, and then there's been a series of bombings going on. Throughout the country, blaming.
There's a bombing in Strasbourg.
Yes, bombing in Strasbourg,
Because like we love Hollywood loves like when we're making these movies that are set in late 1890s, we always have to like bring the world to the edge of a world war. You know, it reminded me a little of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen movie in that regard. But they didn't go as cyberpunky with it, where they're introducing all sorts of technology decades ahead of time. So
right, no, absolutely,
yay,
yeah, step in the right direction.
Yeah,
but yeah, all these bombings are happening. You know, they're blaming on nationalists, anarchists. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't quite know what to make of it. And then we see Irene Adler with a package that she's delivering. We see Sherlock Holmes following her in one of his many disguises, slightly
Chinese
offensive
dude,
slightly offensive Chinese costume. Yeah. You know, he tells Irene Adler some men are following her, and then it turns out like she knows about it, and it's like a trap to.
Yeah, she's like, no, they're actually escorting me, and now you have to beat them all up, and you know he beats them up in the slow-mo thing that we did in the first film.
Yeah, and also that it seems like Sherlock and Irene are actually going to meet up for dinner afterwards. So this fight isn't personal. It's just kind of, I don't know, just roughhousing. I was like,
yeah, it's just business. It's just a thing to get a little action in the first 10 minutes of the movie, I guess.
Yeah, I was like, all right, so wait, are they, I guess, like frenemies or lovers or enemies? Like,
I think that's pretty much what the first film established.
Like, all right, I'm going to have you beaten up, but then we'll meet up for dinner.
They got a Batman Catwoman thing going on, basically.
Okay, But yeah, so like you said, like first 10 minutes, we get an action scene. We get that that thing that Sherlock did in the first movie where he's like planning each move and it's like slow motion.
Right.
He's like, oh, if I do this and hit him here and hit him here.
And it seems like there's a lot more of that in this film. Like
a lot. It happens like three times. Right.
A lot more slow-mo fighting, a lot more explosions and stuff, and, like, so much speed ramping.
I think that might be my first thing about this movie. Is like, it's not really, there's no real mystery to solve. It's not really a mystery movie. It is more action, you know, beat 'em up.
Yeah, boom, boom. I realized kind of late in the film, it's not really a mystery film. Like, you know, what makes mystery or detective films fun is like you see the clues along with the detective and you try to guess and try and figure out what it all means. But here Sherlock Holmes is like, aha, I observed this thing 10, 20 minutes ago in the runtime of the movie. And here's the thing I observed. And it's like the first time we're seeing it.
Yeah, exactly. So he's like,
this person obviously had plastic surgery because I observed the skin behind his ear was bunched up from when it was like, And it's like, well, how did we know that? How did we don't, like, we don't know until Sherlock Holmes tells us. And so it's a lot less fun in that regard.
Yeah. You know? It's more, there's not a lot of chances for the audience to sort of guess what's happening. It's more like Sherlock pointing out, you know, what's going on in his mind and him solving the case. And we're just like playing catch up.
Yeah. And it's not so much, haha, you didn't notice that. And it's like, well, you didn't show us that movie. So we didn't have a chance to solve it. It's, you know, it's fun when it's like you can see the clues clearly and you're just like, oh, I don't know what this all means. And then Sherlock comes along and is like, oh, here's what this all meant. You know, from A, I deduced B and the C and D. And then you're like, oh, how did I not see that? And, oh, you know, that's fun. But yeah, here it's just like a bunch of random shit happens.
So. Yeah, it really is. And it's just like, yeah, just beat them up and fight. So Irene Adler drops off the package with the man at an auction happening. Sherlock Holmes gets there. He stops him from opening the package, but
because it's a bomb, he prevents a bomb. He puts like the little auction paddle on it to prevent the thing from flipping over and activating the bomb.
Right. And then he's able to start a fire, get everybody out of there. He puts the bomb in this tomb.
That's in the sarcophagus, yeah.
Sarcophagus, that's the word. And and then the bomb goes off and he saves the day and tra-la-la. And then we cut to Irene Adler meeting up with his mysterious employer, the person that hired her to drop off the bomb. Yeah. And she's supposed to have had a letter to give him, but she doesn't have it because Sherlock Holmes took it.
Yeah.
And we find out that the employer is Moriarty.
I
don't know. I expected him to be, you know, more in the shadows, more in the game of shadows.
Well, like she's sitting in a restaurant and, you know, he's like, oh, you thought you were safe because we were meeting in a public place and ha 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 ha. And then he makes a gesture and everyone clears out of the restaurant. So like everyone in the restaurant was working for Moriarty. And that kind of struck me this time because in the Man from U.N.C.L.E. film, the guy Ritchie did, he did the exact same thing at one point early in the film. Like Napoleon Solo and Ilya Kuryakin are meeting at this outdoor restaurant thing. And Jared Harris, who's like the head of the CIA, he like gestures at one point and everybody else in the restaurant leaves. And I was like, wow, that's an unusually specific thing that Guy Ritchie likes doing in his films.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's his move.
That's his move. Yeah. I was just like, wow, that's kind of weird that he did that with two films running with the exact same actor.
But, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Tarantino has feet, and Guy Ritchie has, you know, people leaving restaurants at the same time.
Restaurants.
His signature move.
Yeah. And then he poisons her tea, but we don't find out that she was killed until like significantly later in the film.
Right.
Moriarty is just kind of like taunting Holmes. He's like, oh yeah, yeah, by the way, I killed her yesterday.
Yeah. But we also see like, I think Holmes actually does find the body of the man that was given the package, like lying on the street. So he was killed as well.
Right. He was like poisoned by a dart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting.
Yeah. You know. A lot of dart poisoning in this movie, too.
Right. Lots of darts. Like, we see it when Watson.
So many darts.
Well, yeah. Like, is Guy Ritchie trying to bring darts back?
I don't know. Yeah.
But yeah, because we see at one point when Watson goes back to Baker Street to see Sherlock, he, you know, we see like there's tons of plants and animals around, and Watson gets shot with a dart. By Sherlock Holmes, arrow, but he just kind of is more annoyed by it than anything.
And Holmes is like, you know, he's doing his usual eccentric stuff, and he's like developing this urban camouflage suit, which is basically just like long underwear, but it's painted to like camouflage into the room he's in. So he's like painted to like half look like a bookcase and half like a pillar, and you can't really see him in the room until he moves.
I wonder if that will come back into play.
No. It's weird. I don't know if it would work in life. I suspect not.
Yeah. Once you see something lumpy that's shaped like a human being, you're like, oh, yeah. No, you're right there.
And wouldn't it like only work if you were looking at the person from a very specific angle?
Exactly.
Wouldn't the lighting have to be just right?
If you're looking at it head on, maybe. But if you're looking at it from the side, it's like, no, you're three-dimensional. Yeah. I see you.
Because like literally the backside of his long underwear thing is not painted at all. So it's only going to work from a certain angle. And you would think if just, like Watson just turns up the gas lamp, he would be like, oh, hey, there you are, Holmes.
Yeah. Like, isn't Holmes supposed to be the smartest man on Earth? How do you not collect that?
I don't know. It's weird. I don't know why we're trying to make Sherlock Holmes into a ninja or something, but okay.
Yeah. And I mean, we also see that Holmes has been doing experiments on Watson's dog, Gladstone.
Yeah.
Gladstone. Yeah. And at one point he's like almost near death. And then Holmes shoots him up with some type of elixir, and then he springs mm-hmm. back to life.
Yeah.
And then Watson is like, oh, wow, that could come in handy. I could use that. And then Holmes gives it to him as a wedding gift because Watson is getting married.
Right, right. He's getting married tomorrow. He was like, he just gotten engaged in the first film. So here he's like, oh, we're getting tomorrow. I'm getting married tomorrow. And I'm having my stag party tonight. So
yeah,
let's get ready for that.
Right. And like as soon as I saw that Holmes brought the dog back to life, and they make a point to show that Holmes is giving Watson the elixir. Part mm-hmm. of me was like, I wonder if that will come back into play later in the movie.
Wait, was this your first time watching the movie? I forget.
I think so. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it was. It was.
All right.
But yeah, so then we also see that Holmes has been obsessed with James Moriarty as mm-hmm. Watson looks into his room and he sees this whole like vision board of pictures of Moriarty and the red string, like the always
articles pinned up, and the red yarn connecting everything. That's,
yeah,
people in movies and TV shows love to do that. I don't know where that got started. I don't know what the first show or movie to do that was. I mean, I can see having like stuff pinned up on a bulletin board, but I don't see how the red string really helps you. Right. Yes, these things are connected. Yes. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes.
I think visually just looks more dramatic. I don't know.
Yeah.
If there are any conspiracy theorists out there, do you guys still do your bulletin boards like this? Is this bad representation of you and your people? Let us know. but yeah, like you said, like Watson is having a stag party tonight, so the boys mm-hmm. Go out. We see, Sherlock isn't too crazy about him getting married, but he's still,
because it means the end of their partnership is
the end of an era.
Yeah. Sidekick.
Yeah. So, they go out to the stag party, and we see that they're joined by Mycroft, played by the great Stephen Fry, who's Sherlock's older brother.
Sherlock Holmes's smarter brother, played by Stephen Fry. I was really excited when I heard that Stephen Fry was cast as Mycroft because I was like, oh. That's like perfect casting. So I was really, really looking forward to seeing him as Mycroft. And I was, I think it's fair to say I was somewhat disappointed with what they did with Mycroft.
I mean, do you think it's like, so it's not on him that Mycroft, I thought Mycroft was okay in this movie, but.
Yeah. He plays the part well. He does what is required of him in the script. I just don't think the character is used well, and they have one scene in particular where I'm just like, no, that Mycroft would never ever do that.
Oh, I think I know the
was
a little odd. I was like,
that's so out of left field. He also, I totally forgotten, he calls Sherlock Shirley throughout, because they imply a few times that Mycroft is gay. I think they're going for like an Oscar Wilde type of thing. So I think that's why he's calling Sherlock Shirley. And at one point he meets Mary, Watson's wife, and he's like, oh, I see how someone could be attracted to someone of your gender or something like that. So yeah, I think they're going for like an Oscar Wilde thing, but I don't really know. And they never like state outright. It's weird.
Yeah, like I thought that, I know what the scene you're talking about, because that did kind of come out of nowhere. It's like some odd quirk. And it's like, oh, is that, I didn't know if that was something in the books. Is Mycroft just as kind of oddball as Sherlock can be?
I mean, he is very oddball. So the character Mycroft, he appears in only two stories by Arthur Conan Doyle. Conan Doyle wrote like 60 Sherlock Holmes stories altogether over the course of several decades. And Mycroft is introduced in a story called The Adventure of the Greek Interpreter. And then he's brought back in another story called the Adventure of the Bruce Partington Plans. And the first one, Sherlock Holmes is like, oh, yeah, he's like just as smart as me. He's just as observant as me, but he's horribly lazy. So he can't be a detective like me. And he takes Watson around to his club, the Diogenes Club, to introduce him. And they have an adventure together. And the thing with Mycroft is he's very antisocial and introverted. So it's like Sherlock is like, yeah, he goes to his offices in Pall Mall, his lodgings, and the Diogenes Club, which is a club for like the most unsociable men in London, where the rule is you have to be absolutely silent except in the visitors' room.
Yes, I remember that episode.
Yeah. So, and then when Doyle brings him back in the Bruce Partington Plans, he sort of elevates Mycroft in importance, and Sherlock Holmes is like, oh, yeah, he's actually like really high up in the British government, and he uses his smarts to like deal with all these international situations and matters of utmost delicacy, and he can see how all the pieces fit together and stuff. So it's very neat. And and Mycroft just basically comes around and he's like, hey, Sherlock, I need you to do this really super important thing because these submarine plans have been stolen. And Mycroft has kind of caught the imagination of a lot of Sherlock Holmes readers and other writers over the years. So like, he's a character that you see in a lot of other Sherlock Holmes novels and stories and movies and stuff like that, because he's just a neat character.
Yeah.
And when Billy Wilder did his movie, The Private Life of Sherlock Holmes, I think that movie was the first place that connected Mycroft with like the British Secret Service, where he's like, Mycroft's like a spy master, and the Diogenes Club is just a front, and other people have taken that idea and just ran with it. And yeah, so this movie's doing a bit of that too. So
okay, got it. All right,
and like apparently Stephen Fry, big time Sherlock Holmes fan. He was like in a Sherlock Holmes like fan club at age 10, like the youngest member. So yeah, I'm sure he was thrilled to play Mycroft.
Yeah, no, this is the dream come true then.
Yeah, I don't. I wonder what his reaction was when he was. When he read the script for this, if he was like, oh, yes, I'm all in. I mean, obviously he agreed to it, so, yeah, I guess he's cool with it.
Yeah, I guess it's fine. But so they're at the stag party. When Watson slowly realizes that none of his friends are at the stag party.
Right.
The friends that Holmes was supposed to invite, and we slowly realize, like, actually Holmes is here working on the case, and he's staking out a fortune teller.
Right.
To get some information.
Simza. Who is Noomi Rapace's character. And Holmes talks with her. They do like that tarot card stuff. And there's an assassin who's after Holmes. And then there's a big fight scene and stuff.
Huge fight scene. Just like slow motion fighting and, just knives everywhere. And at one point they fall into a cock ring fight, and then they fall out of a window, then they jump back into the building and fight.
It's a lot of falling. Yeah.
A lot of falling, a lot of
fighting. And for most of this, Watson's oblivious to this because he's like, okay, I don't know anyone here, so I'm going to go off gambling. He's in another room, so he's not aware of this until Holmes and the assassin literally crash down on the table.
Yeah, exactly. So Watson is, getting drunk and gambling his money away, and Holmes is just getting into fisticuffs over this whole thing. Because I think he went to see the fortune teller because I think he figured out the letter he took from Irene Adler was supposed to go to the fortune teller. It's like she might know something about it. And I don't know, it was a little...
Yeah, it's hard to follow. Yeah.
It is a little hard to follow, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, it's a very frantic movie, so you don't. It's tough for the movie to slow down and get you to absorb the plot points that you're supposed to absorb, I think.
Right. So, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, because it kind of takes what the last movie did, and it's like ramping it up to 11. So.
Yeah, I mean, which is it's a trap a lot of movies fall into where.
Yeah, I agree. Especially sequels, you know.
Yeah, whatever
set the first movie apart, they do more of that, and then it's yeah.
And then it's a big old. Then you get Thor: Love and Thunder.
Yeah. This Thor loved and thundered all over the place, man.
All over my face. This movie's yeah. Thor: Love and Thundered. But yeah, so the next day, the boys are beat up and hungover, and mm-hmm. Holmes takes Watson to his wedding day.
just
looking a fright. Yeah. But you know, the wedding still goes off without a hitch.
They're slovenly, they're unshaven, they're all bruised up and beaten up, and Mary takes it pretty well.
Yeah. I was about to say, like, I don't know, I feel like any bride would be in their right, you know, would be in the right to be like, what the fuck is going, like,
yeah,
you
know, yeah.
Just beat Holmes and Watson over the head with an umbrella, like the old lady in the Laugh-In or something,
like the Lockhorns or something. Yeah,
exactly. The Lockhorn. Wow, what a reference!
Yeah, the Lockhorns. Yeah. I think you know, it's something that I find kind of interesting. I think I might not be correct on this, but as far as I know, this is the first time that Watson's wedding was ever depicted in a Sherlock Holmes story or a Sherlock Holmes adaptation.
Oh, I mean, besides the TV show?
Yeah, well, I looked it up. The TV show, the episode where they had Watson getting married, that was done in 2014. So that was a few years after this.
Oh, so okay.
I was like, oh, that's interesting. Because, like, at the, like, Watson meets Mary Morstan, his eventual wife, in the second Sherlock Holmes novel, The Sign of Four. And it's literally like he falls in love with her over the course of the case. And then the last scene of the novel, he's like, oh, she's agreed to be my wife. And Sherlock Holmes, because Sherlock Holmes is kind of a dick, he's like, oh, I can't congratulate you. Because he's like, oh, women, you know, they just distract you. That's just bad news. Yeah. And then
So like Andrew Tate.
Yeah.
You know, these females are.
Yeah. And then when the short stories start up with Scandal Bohemia, which was the story that introduced Irene Adler, Watson has been married for a few months. And so, like, after that, we have, like, stories where Watson is, it's either, like, a flashback to when Watson was still a bachelor living in Baker Street, or he goes, he's like, oh, honey, I have to go off on a case with Sherlock Holmes. And I think Doyle maybe just got sick of doing that, so he eventually killed Mary off, like, wow. In a sentence.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
And Mary's gone back to her home planet.
Yeah. So, you know, because like, you know, back in the Victorian days, I think you just had your hero get married at the end of the novel because that's how you ended novels, you know?
Right. So yeah.
It's not like a horribly well-developed romance because she's hardly ever an onstage character again.
Right. More of an object or something like that.
Yeah. And in fact, like there are people who, in the Sherlock Holmes fan community, who think Watson was married like a number of times, like 2, 3, 4 times, because he always has all these references to his wedding and they don't always work out in the chronology of the stories. So they're like, oh, well, Watson was obviously married more than once then. He's talking about his first marriage here and his second marriage here and his third marriage here and his 16th marriage here. And it gets wild.
Wow. Yeah. He's just constantly getting married.
Interesting.
Okay. Interesting. I did not know that. Thank you.
Anyway, I thought it was interesting that we saw John Watson and Mary Morstan's wedding for the first time, as far as I know. So
yay, love wins.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's interesting. Well, yeah, haven't done that before. That's kind of surprising that in like 100 years of Sherlock Holmes story, this is the first time they've done that.
Yeah, look at them breaking new ground. Yeah. I mean, it's in this movie, but still.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
After the wedding, Holmes is summoned to meet Moriarty. There's like one of Moriarty's minions who comes, and he's like, you've got to come see Moriarty.
Yeah.
And Holmes goes to Moriarty's university, and he like basically meets with him in his classroom. And that was another interesting thing I thought this movie did. I'm trying to give this movie its due where I can. But
there you go. All right.
This was like, this was the first, you know, like, you know, you always hear about Professor Moriarty, but this is the first time I really ever saw or thought about Moriarty being a teacher and him like influencing young minds and stuff. And I was like, ooh, that's kind of creepy and spooky.
Yeah.
Somebody that evil and twisted has like a whole classroom of people. You know, the whole thing with Professor Moriarty was that Holmes was the only one who knew that he was this criminal mastermind. Everybody else thought he was just like this normal college professor. So, but Holmes was the only one who could see the patterns.
Right.
Yeah. And Holmes has Moriarty sign a copy of his book, Dynamics of an Asteroid, which they do say in one of the, in the Sherlock Holmes story, The Final Problem. Or no, wait. Maybe it's a Valley of Fear. One of the Moriarty stories where he's mentioned, he wrote a book called Dynamics of an Asteroid. And
okay.
Yeah. And you know, after he has Moriarty sign it, Holmes is like analyzing his handwriting. He's like, oh, well, you know, these indicate that you're a man of great intelligence, but you're also a narcissist and blah, 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 blah. And yeah, it's a neat scene. This is one of the better scenes in the movie, I think.
It was. I thought it was a good scene. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Downey is a great actor.
Yeah.
You know, Jared's a fantastic actor. So we do get to see some pretty top-notch acting between the two of them, and we get like a good sense that they are truly equal as far as like intellect goes. Like, you know, Holmes, there's no way, because like I think with Holmes, his thing is like he's just so much smarter than everybody else in the room around him. You know, with the exception of maybe Mycroft, but he's just like. Right. He steps ahead of everybody, but so to see
ahead of everybody.
Oh, nice. So to see something like this where like somebody is on his level and knows how he thinks and knows the game he's playing is pretty fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. And this is where Moriarty reveals that he poisoned Irene Adler, and you know, Holmes does not take that well. Although there isn't much talk about her the rest of the movie. So
that's it. Yeah, exactly. She has a moment where, like, you know, when they're, because Holmes takes her handkerchief and he kind of like, you know, sniffs it and throws it into the sea. But yeah, for the most part, after she dies, like, that's it. She doesn't really get brought up again. It's like, oh, that's not a great way to, you know.
Yeah, it doesn't seem as consequential as it could have or should have been, I think. Which is unfortunate. You know, because it makes the character seem very disposable.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't like that. I mean, I know some people say the same thing about maybe like the Black Widow in the MCU or something like that. But yeah, here I thought like, yeah, it's like.
We see people mourning her in Endgame and stuff. I mean.
That's true. Like Irene Adler didn't even get that. But I don't know. Maybe that's how she's treated in the book, or I don't know. I felt like she.
Like in the book, she's like offhandedly referred to as the late Irene Adler. And I think there's debate about whether that means she was dead or if that's just
tardy,
referring to like that was her maiden name. I think that might have been a Victorian way of saying like the late.
Okay. So. I didn't know. I'm learning so much today.
Sherlock Holmes fandom is just it gets wild, man.
We fall down some rabbit holes.
Exactly. And there's like, you know, over 100 years of this stuff. So it's wild. So, you know, it's personal now. We get the bit of Doyle dialogue towards the end where, you know, Moriarty's like, oh, well, the only way you're going to be able to stop me is to kill me. And Holmes is like, if I were assured of the former, I would cheerfully accept the latter. It's like, yeah, I will. If I'm assured of you dying, I'm cool with dying too. So
fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so meanwhile, Watson and Mary, they're getting on the train for their honeymoon. They're going to Brighton, I believe they said.
Yeah.
They mentioned it a few times.
Yeah, I'm sure it's not Brighton Beach, Brooklyn. I'm sure there's like another Brighton.
Probably not. No.
They're not going to like that place near Coney Island. Okay.
So they get into a first class compartment, and then almost immediately the porter tries to kill Watson. Because like during the Holmes Moriarty scene, Holmes is like, hey, you should leave Watson alone. because, you know, he's married and he's not involved in my cases anymore. So he has nothing to do with this. This is just between you and me. And Moriarty's like, oh, well, you should know in astronomy that when two bodies collide, there's always collateral damage. And yeah. So it's just him saying, like, no, I'm going to take out Watson, too, because I know it'll hurt you. So
evil.
Because I'm so evil.
Oh, son of a bitch.
Anyway, so the porter tries to kill Watson. I think this was another dart thing, right? Wasn't it? Or was he trying to get him with a poison needle?
I think it was a poison needle, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. A lot of poison needles in this movie, too.
Yep.
just sharp things going into people and poisoning people.
Yes.
That happens, like, every other scene.
Yeah. So, like, we get another fight, see another action scene. We see Sherlock Holmes helping Watson. He's in disguise as, like, as a woman.
He's in drag.
It's funny. And, and we also see at one point, to save Mary, Sherlock Holmes pushes her off a moving train into when the train's going over a bridge and pushes her into the ocean below.
Yep.
And Watson's like, did you just kill my new wife, you son of a bitch?
He's like, no, I did it at precisely the right moment and blah, 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 blah.
I timed it perfectly.
And then we find out a little later that Mycroft is in a rowboat and he's like rescues Mary.
So it's cool.
So it's all cool.
I pushed her off a train, but you know, just Mycroft got her, baby. It's all good.
It's all good. So Holmes and Watson go to Paris, which is where the train is going, and they're off and they're like investigating this whatever it is. I couldn't quite tell you why they're going to Paris or what is leading them to be like, oh yeah, Paris is a place to go to now.
All right. So I could look it up in corner Wikipedia.
Okay. See. Yeah. Let's go to the Wikipedia. That's probably better.
After defeating Moriarty's men, Holmes and Watson travel to Paris and locate Simza.
Who's the psychic lady. Yeah.
Who's the psychic lady. Right. And then Holmes tells her she has been targeted because her brother Rene is working for Moriarty and may have told her his plans.
Right. Okay. And it says, so they go to Paris and then they go to this, Romani camp.
Right. I mean, I don't know if we could say like gypsy.
They do say that word a lot in this movie, but you know, I mean, and that is the word they would have used back then, but I think that word is largely recognized as a slur these days. So
okay, so we'll say... say...
Say, like, Romani, I think that's
Romani. Good. Romani travelers.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
Yes. So they go there, they find out that Simpson's brother, Rene, is involved with Moriarty, and he's been sending her drawings, and Holmes and Watson deduce from the paper that's used that he's at a wine cellar that's near a printing press, and it's like, oh, that's where our anarchist group had its headquarters.
Which is weird that she never thought to look there for her brother before, because I don't know, that's one of their old haunts, so you'd think she would have like swung by there once or twice, but
yeah. So they're trying to track this bomb. So her brother Rene has been forced to make bombs for Moriarty.
Right.
He's trying to start a world war.
Exactly.
And then, you know, it's like his master plan is like start world war, shit happens, profit.
I mean,
that's the extent to which I understand Moriarty's plan in this movie.
I mean, some other leaders have thought the same. You know what? I'm not even going to say it.
Yeah. Anyway, so like Mary has been rescued by Mycroft, and then we have this really weird scene where like Mary's there with Mycroft, and Mycroft is just like walking around in the nude for no reason.
Right? That was weird, right?
It's like, so weird, and it's so out of nowhere, and it's so out of character for Mycroft.
Like, when I saw it, I was like, all right, I guess it's just a show that he's kind of a quirky type of person, you know, but I...
Yeah.
Or, I mean, maybe they're trying to do it for laughs, but it's not even that funny, really.
No, it's not. And I just thought, you know, like, Mycroft is just this, you know, he's this introverted, antisocial guy. So I could never see him being just so eccentric or oblivious that he's just like, I'm just going to wander around naked in front of this person. And
yeah, because he's also very prim and proper. So of surely somebody like that would know, oh, walking around naked in front of a lady that isn't done. That's what would
the queen, like a newly married lady.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, what would the queen say? Like, like, you know, just out of, you know, manners alone.
It's so weird and it's so out of nowhere. And like you said, it's not especially funny. It's just odd.
Very odd.
Yeah.
I was like, all right. So I was
just like, why are you doing this? And that's one of the moments where I was just like, oh, yeah, I fucking hate this movie.
So this was the moment where you're like, all right, fuck this movie. This was the last
one. Yeah, I think this was one of my fuck this movie moments.
No, I get it. I get it.
I think that might have been the moment when I first watched this where I was just like, yeah, this is beyond saving.
This is some bullshit.
I don't know. I just don't like it because it seemed like so much of what they were doing was just kind of mocking the characters, you know, the naked Mycroft, the Holmes and drag and all this stuff. Like, you can have fun with the characters without making fun of the characters. And it felt like this movie was making fun of the characters a lot. And
yeah, I could see that.
And even though the first movie took liberties, I never really got that vibe from the first movie, but this one I did.
No, fair enough.
So while they're there, Mary gets an encrypted telegram from Watson and Mycroft translates it, and he's like, oh, it's like this double cryptogram that we got that we developed as kids. And, you know, Watson says something like, oh, I don't miss you at all, and I hope I never see you again. And he's like, oh, if the sentence starts with a consonant, they mean the exact opposite of what they say. So
right.
It's Watson saying like, oh, I really miss you, and blah, 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 blah.
Oh,
that's a sweet
moment.
So Holmes, Watson, and Simza, they go to the anarchist group headquarters.
Right. And they find the leader, Ravash.
I thought it was Claude. Is it Claude Ravash? Is that his full name?
Yeah, I think it's Claude. I just wrote down Ravash, but I think
I just wrote down Claude. So, okay. And he's like, oh, yeah, I got to go along with this because Moriarty has my family.
Yeah. And
yeah. Yeah. And then he commits suicide. And
which, wow, that came out of nowhere.
Yeah, he just like puts a gun to his head and
unalives himself.
Yes.
But then like the people upstairs from the headquarters heard the gunshots, so then they run downstairs. And Sherlock is able to find a secret door that they all go in, and then they find like a room full of explosives, and then they realize that they deduce that there's going to be another bombing happening at the opera, at the local opera.
At the Paris Opera, where there's a performance of Don Giovanni.
Yeah. Ooh, Don Giovanni.
And yeah, there's, let's see, I have this note, this is somewhere at this point in this movie, I just wrote, this directing style is exhausting. Because they're showing everything they're either showing it in slow motion, or it's like, because Holmes is making deductions, we have like all these quick shots of like, oh, you did this thing, and oh, the wax from this candle dripped here, and blah 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 blah, and it's just it gets so exhausting.
Right? Yeah, it does get a little. I mean, I understand it's supposed to be like fast. It's supposed to be fast paced action type of scene, but it somehow it just comes across as maybe like a little too much and a little too
confusing. Yeah, it gets kind of frantic.
Yeah, it becomes too frantic for you to like really kind of get into the stakes of it all. And
So they go to the Paris Opera House and they're like, oh, we got to stop this bombing. But when they're there, the bomb goes off at a hotel nearby instead of the opera.
Yes. It kills several businessmen. And then they find out that the bombing was actually a cover up for the assassination of one of those men, Alfred Meinhardt.
Right. Who's a gun maker.
Yes.
Who is like a arms factory or something. Yeah.
Right. And the assassination was done by a sniper named Sebastian Moran, who's like an expert sharpshooter. Right. And a henchman of Moriarty.
Who's a character from the stories.
Oh, okay. I did not know that.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, when Doyle killed off Sherlock Holmes in The Final Problem, spoiler alert. Well, he meant that to be the last Sherlock Holmes story. He's like, I'm sick of doing this character. I'm just going to kill him off once and for all. And then because Sherlock Holmes was so freaking popular, about 10 years later, he brings Holmes back in a story. And he kind of explains, like, oh, this is how Sherlock Holmes didn't really die in that story where I killed him off.
Mm.
And he brings back he the villain of that story in the Adventure of the Empty House is Sebastian Moran, who was like Moriarty's number two. And he's like a sharpshooter. And he's and he's like killed this person in London. And that's the mystery that brings Holmes back to London, because Holmes has been traveling the world for 3 years. And then he comes back and reveals to Watson, oh, I'm not really dead.
I'm right here. Hello.
Yeah. And then they capture Sebastian Moran together and they're like, hey, that's all cool. You move back into Baker Street with me and we'll start solving mysteries again. And Watson's like, cool.
Rad cool.
Yeah.
And they do air guitar and high five.
Yes,
and
yes. It's very Bill and Ted's.
Yeah. You know, you hear some like a Twisted Sister playing in the background, and
right,
somebody brings out a keg, and
I may be misremembering the story slightly.
I think, I might be confusing it with the end of Caddyshack. Now that I think about it,
Hey everybody, we're all gonna get laid.
I'm all right.
So Moriarty has killed off this gunmaker, and now he's got his arms factory. So Moriarty has all this weaponry and stuff.
So then the three of them follow Moriarty to Germany.
Right. They disguise themselves as Romani and they sneak across the border to Germany. And there's more humorous stuff where Watson and Simza get on horses and Holmes is he on a donkey? I think it's a donkey.
It looks like a donkey or like a Shetland pony, like a little Sebastian type of situation.
Yeah. Yeah. He's on like a miniature horse and it's like, well, how could that keep up with the other horses? I don't.
Anyway. It can't. That's why it's funny, John.
Yeah.
Comedy.
Okay.
So then they get to the factory. Moriarty is able to capture and interrogate Holmes. And before he gets captured, Holmes tells Watson to send out this telegram from this tower.
Right.
And so
And while Moriarty has captured Holmes, he's like, who did you send the telegram to? Who did you? And I'm like, Holmes knows like two people. Okay. It probably wasn't Watson, because Watson's with him. It's probably Mycroft, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
maybe it's Inspector Lestrade. Those are the three. Okay.
Come on. One of those.
He's not the most social of guys, so.
Yeah, he's got a small circle.
Yeah.
So then Holmes kind of reveals Moriarty's plot and reveals that Moriarty has acquired the shares in multiple war profiteering companies and intends to.
Right.
He intends to instigate a world war to make himself a fortune.
I love how we're just reading the Wikipedia summary.
Because
we can't really get it from watching this movie.
Yeah, like, after reading this and thinking about the movie, I was like, oh, yeah, I guess that's what happened.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, that sounds good. That sounds close to what I watched.
That sounds about right.
Okay.
While this is happening, we see Watson, who uses a cannon to destroy this watchtower.
Yeah, like Holmes sent him one of the brother Rene's drawings of the tower, and he writes on there, you know, come up once if convenient, if inconvenient, come all the same. And that's from one of the Holmes stories.
Oh, okay. That sounds like a really clever line. So
yeah,
must be from the book.
Because it's from Doyle. Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah. Not that Guy Ritchie and them don't write the occasional clever line.
They do quip. Once in a while.
Look, I like the first Sherlock Holmes movies. I love the Man from U.N.C.L.E. movie that he did. I just don't like this movie very much. I don't think it's very good. So anyway.
No, fair enough. Fair enough. So then at this point, the watchtower goes crashing down on the building that Holmes and Moriarty are in. And I think Holmes and Watson are able to escape. Moriarty is trapped in the rubble.
And this is, I think, when they're running through the forest and everybody's shooting at them.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and we got all this slow-mo thing. You know, we're seeing about like maybe 20 seconds worth of footage, and it takes like 5 minutes. Without all the speed ramping in this movie would be about an hour.
There's a lot of almost like Zack Snyder-esque slow-mo being used throughout this whole movie. Yeah. It's like,
I feel like we're out of that trend a little bit. You know, you still see it occasionally where it's just like, you know, fast, slow.
Yeah.
And a little of that goes a long way, you know?
Very much so. Yeah. I'm glad we're kind of done with that, because it did get overused. Like, like people were just, you know, just using it way too much.
Yeah. So they're running through the forest. Trees are exploding all around them. Holmes gets like a little, like a chunk of wood in his leg, I think it was.
Something like that.
When they get on the train, we see Watson treating Holmes on the train, and he's like, "Oh, I'm a doctor. I gotta treat you and blah blah blah. Don't you effing die on me, Holmes? And
don't you die on me? Yeah, because at one
don't
point,
you die on me, man?
yeah, because at one point he Holmes stops breathing.
Yeah.
So Watson's like, oh, I need to bring him back to life. Oh wait, what about those shots that Holmes gave me earlier on for my wedding
with
gift?
The magic bring it back to life juice?
Yeah. I think that's the scientific name. Yeah,
I think that is. I think it's supposed to be like a shot of adrenaline, so he like gives Holmes like the shot of adrenaline. He's like, oh yeah, my wedding gift, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
And yeah, and then
it's like Holmes, it's like that scene in The Batman when you know, that one.
Yeah. So Holmes is good again. They're on the train. They're going to this big peace conference in Switzerland at Reichenbach, at the Reichenbach Falls.
You know, yes.
And if you're a Sherlock Holmes fan, you know what's coming.
Ooh.
What happens to Sherlock at the Reichenbach Falls?
Right. So because Holmes deduced that Moriarty, like, his end game is to create an international incident at a peace summit in Switzerland. And they deduced, I think we talked about earlier, that Renee Sims's brother is disguised as one of the ambassadors who's going to do the assassination after he's been giving radical reconstructive surgery, which again, that's something, there's no way us as the viewer could get that.
Yeah, Holmes has a scene where he's like, oh, I figured out this was going on because like there were these two henchmen who looked exactly like each other. We thought they were twins, but I deduced that they weren't twins when one of them got shot during this big action sequence and the other one didn't express any concern for him. And then also I saw like some of his skin stretched behind his ear. So therefore he had the plastic surgery. And again, it's not anything the audience has really seen or noticed or has had the opportunity to figure out. So it's,
yeah, like when he's talking about that.
So it's not too fun, you know?
Yeah, like when he talked about scene, like, oh yeah, one of the, who I thought was a twin got shot and the other twin wasn't concerned. I was like, I don't remember that scene at all. Did we see that?
I don't know. Because, like, the movie, the scene is so frantic, even though it's in slow-mo, and there's so much shit blowing up all around, you don't notice it. So it's not real fun when Holmes reveals it. You're just like, I guess that's a thing that happened?
I guess.
Okay, if you say so, all right.
So
her brother, Renee, is disguised as one of the ambassadors, which narrows it down to, like, six people.
Right.
So they got to figure out which one of the six ambassadors he is. And the targets are the German chancellor and the French prime minister.
Right.
And Holmes is like, he's dancing with Simza to like kind of scout out the room at first. And then after he's like figured some stuff out, he goes and dances with Watson for a bit.
Of course. Oh, men dancing?
Well, that's like, no one reacts to it.
Like
1891, and no one reacts to two men dancing together in the middle of a ballroom. Really? Okay. All right.
Exactly. Like, I mean, I don't know much about that era, but I would assume that would have been like a huge scandal. Like, oh, what's the meaning of?
People would like look askance at.
What's the meaning of this?
I don't know. So it's, you know, it's not too terribly funny because no one's reacting to it. It's just like, oh, Holmes and Watson are dancing together. But yeah, it's not terribly funny if no one's reacting to it. So
yeah, so it's kind of whatever. So while The two of them are dancing. They split up, and we see Holmes meets up with Moriarty on a balcony to talk about everything that's going on over a game of chess.
They start to play chess, And meanwhile, Watson and Simza are trying to figure out which man is Renee. And she's like, oh, well, you know, it couldn't be this one because they don't have the hairline to cover up the surgery scars. My brother is left-handed, so it can't be this one. And blah, 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 blah. And then eventually Watson like knocks over a tray to see who doesn't react. So they kind of figure out that which one Renee is.
Yeah, I was trying to, does that logic parse? Like, I guess, whoever.
I don't think so, really. But...
Yeah. I was like, all right, so whoever's in disguise is going to be so focused on being undercover that they won't react like a human would under regular situations.
It's weird. They're like, oh yeah, he's going to be super stressed or super focused on his task. So
I was like, I guess.
Therefore, he won't react when I knock over this tray of drinks.
Yeah, and I was like, all right.
He's like, he won't react to the unexpected, and it's weird.
Yeah, I was like, all right, because I mean the whole reveal of them trying to find out who's doing it kind of rests on this. So I was like,
I mean, it worked, so I guess, sure. All right. It gives Watson something to do. So Watson tackles the assassin, and then Renee is killed by a dart that's shot through a cane. Again, lots of dart killings in this movie.
Big darts. Big dart people.
So many darts killings.
Mm-hmm. So many darts.
And then meanwhile, Holmes and Moriarty are out on the balcony. And I like how they kind of progress from actually playing a game of chess to just like calling out their moves, and then they're both playing the game in their heads. I thought that's kind of cool.
Yes,
that was a neat touch.
Yeah, that was pretty neat. Pretty neat.
And then we find out again. We find out this whole thing's been going on with the code book. It was like, oh yeah, I deduced that you couldn't have kept all this in your head. You had a code book for all this stuff. It was this little red code book because I snuck in and I witnessed one of your lectures in disguise. Again, we haven't seen this in the movie. We're just seeing it in flashback.
Yep.
So he's like, and then after I saw that you had this little red code book, I managed to do a little switcheroo when I was being tortured by you, and also when I was a bellboy and I pickpocketed it from you. And then I when you were torturing me, I put a fake code book in there that I somehow had time to create. I sent the genuine code book back to London, where Mary and Inspector Lestrade have now raided your deposit boxes and gotten all your money.
Yeah, I was like, can they do I don't know. I guess part of me was thinking, on what grounds do they have to do that?
There's some sort of evidence that they have, I guess. It's I can't say I'm entirely following, but it's going so quickly. You're just like, okay, sure, all right.
Yeah,
it says in the Wikipedia summary, they seize Moriarty's assets and donate his fortune to charities for war widows and orphans. So that's nice of them.
That's nice. Aww.
That's cool. I don't remember them saying that in the movie, but hey, great.
No, that I do remember. They did say that. Really, but
All right.
But it's really briefly. I think I was trying to figure out, like, they can just come in and take your money on, like, no real charges or anything like that.
See, that's the thing. The movie doesn't really slow down for the exposition scene, so it's really easy to miss stuff. So
yeah, kind of. So at this point, we see Moriarty has been defeated by the Great Holmes.
Right.
And it looks like Moriarty wants to, like, you know, physically attack him, but then Holmes was thinking about physically attacking him. And we see...
They're both having fist fights in their heads.
Yes.
They're both doing that Sherlock Holmes, I anticipate you, you will make this move and I will make this move and blah, blah, blah. And they're both doing this, but neither one has done anything. It's kind of funny when you think about it.
they're head fighting at this point.
Yeah. They're head fighting.
Yeah. But at the end, they both come to the conclusion that Holmes would lose in a fist fight against
Because Holmes is injured. His shoulder was injured before. I said his leg was injured before. Is his shoulder?
He's hurt somewhere.
He's hurt somewhere. Yeah. Some extremity.
But so what they decided to do is Holmes decided to play the wild card as always. He grabs Moriarty. Watson comes in to meet up with them, and Watson sees Holmes throw himself and Moriarty over the balcony.
Yeah, they both roll over into the Reichenbach Falls, because this whole thing is taking place in like this castle that's built over the falls. So there's like literally a waterfall right underneath this balcony. I don't know if that's a thing that has ever happened in the history of architecture, but it looks cool, so sure, whatever.
It looks nice. It looks pretty.
It looks neat. Yeah.
Yeah, so, and then we cut to Holmes' funeral. Watson's doing a voiceover saying, yeah, there was no, you know, they couldn't search the ocean for their bodies.
Couldn't recover the bodies.
Everyone's dressed in black, and yeah, it looks like our hero is gone.
Yeah, he is the best and wisest man I've ever known. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah.
Right. Yes. So,
and then like a little while later, we see Watson and Mary. They're finally having their honeymoon in Brighton. They're getting on. They're getting ready to go. And Mary's like, shouldn't you pack? We're leaving in like a couple hours. And Watson's like, oh, as soon as I'm done writing this story. And then Watson gets a package. Mrs. Hudson brings in a package, and he opens up the package, and it's like an oxygen tank that Holmes was fiddling with when they were meeting with Mycroft.
Right, like a breathing device.
Yeah. So Watson's like, oh, if he had that on him when he went over into the falls, that may have been how he survived. And he rushes out of the room to ask Mary about the delivery man. And then we see Sherlock Holmes, and he's been disguised as a chair this whole time.
Ha-ha!
With his little camouflage underwear thing.
Right. Underwear. It's long johns. Yes.
Yeah. And yeah, he goes over to the typewriter where Watson has written up the story, and Watson has just ended it with the end, and Holmes like just types in a question mark after that. And
the end?
Da, 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 da. Yeah.
So, shake, rattle, and roll.
It's a wild ride, this movie, man.
Quite a wild ride. I mean, I didn't hate it as you did originally, but
I didn't hate it as much as I did before this time around. I was more just exhausted and bored by it.
Mostly. But yeah, you know? I could see why it moves at a fast pace. It doesn't necessarily build the things you need to build in order to like really kind of care about the characters and the stakes and whatnot. And it just kind of moves kind of at breakneck speed, and like it doesn't give you a chance to realize that maybe some of the logic is flawed in a few of the things that happen here and there.
I think that's fair. Yeah, maybe some of the logic is flawed. Yeah.
Slightly flawed.
So, yeah, it's very frantic. It's not a lot of fun as a mystery because, like I said, you can't really follow along the way you want to in a Sherlock Holmes story. So,
yeah.
And they have a lot of things where it's just, it seemed like they were mocking the characters, you know, and you kill off Rachel McAdams. What are you doing there, people?
Yeah, that was weird.
She's delightful. What are you doing?
She's lovely. What's going on with you guys? But yeah, and then that's the movie. I don't know if I could recommend it. I think it's a decent, you know, maybe watch, but yeah, I wouldn't expect too much from it. Like it's entertaining enough. I think that's the best I can give it.
Yeah. Okay.
And yeah, that's pretty much it. It's entertaining enough.
That's more generous than I would say.
It's a new year, John. I'm trying to be positive.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there are little nuggets that I like. I mean, I like that we see Watson's wedding. I think that's kind of cool, especially, you know, because they arrive all beat up and stuff. And you know, and I really like them showing Moriarty actually operating as a professor. I thought that was neat. That's not something we see in a lot of Sherlock Holmes adaptations. Right. And yeah, I mean, I would have liked to have gone even further than that. If like some of his students could have been his henchmen or something like that, and we could have seen him like corrupting the youth or something like that.
Yeah, but, no, that would have been good.
But no, it doesn't work for me. It still doesn't really work for me. I mean, yeah. I don't have the white hot rage about it that I did in 2012, but, okay. You know, what you gonna do?
Yeah. All right. You've cooled down. That's good. That's a good thing.
I've cooled down. I can't work myself up.
Yeah.
About this like I used to.
Okay. That's fine. That's fine. Yep.
I don't know. If you showed me another horrible Sherlock Holmes adaptation tomorrow, I could get all up in arms about that. But, you know, this one, I think this time I knew what to expect, so.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Fair enough. And, I guess that's the episode, guys. Thanks for listening to the podcast, as always. And so next week, SNL still isn't back yet. It's coming back on the 17th. But we did have... Should we talk about the next episode, what we're going to do, or tease it?
Sure.
Okay, so I think we'll make it official here, put it in the books. Next week, we're doing a CNN documentary that just came out, first one this year. It's getting a little bit of buzz on the interwebs. It's all over my feed. Guys, we're going to talk all about the Chevy Chase documentary. I'm Chevy Chase, and you're not.
Yeah, this is like the past week I've been seeing like a different story on my feed, like pretty much every day. It's just like, you know, oh, here's a heinous thing that Chevy Chase did a decade or more ago. Here's another heinous thing he did. And here's, you know, here's why he's an asshole. Here's why he's an asshole. So it's sort of like relitigating all these things. And it's kind of wild, you know. And of course, it's going to cover his time on Saturday Night Live and cover his time on Community. Apparently, nobody in the cast of Community agreed to participate in this thing.
Oh boy,
they got Jay Chandrasekhar, who directed several episodes of Community. He was like the only person who was willing to go on record about Chevy Chase's behavior on the Community set. Which,
yeah,
wow.
When I first heard about this doc, part of me was like, oh, is this going to be like a, you know, like a whitewashed kind of toned down version of what really happened between him and all the times he's pissed off somebody in his illustrious career. But it doesn't seem like it's going to be like that. From what I've read, he didn't have like editing credits in here at all. So like, I think we're going to see it warts and all. So I'm looking forward to.
Yeah. And this is the thing that Chevy Chase participated in, him, his family, his wife, his daughters, and like Goldie Hawn and Beverly D'Angelo, I know, are both interviewed in it, and they both have nice things to say about him. So
yeah,
I think they're trying to present a balanced portrait, but you know, who knows? We'll see. We'll watch this and we'll, we'll see. Certainly there's no shortage of material there.
No, not at all. I mean, I think like years ago on this podcast, you know, devotees of the SNL nerds will remember. Like, I think I even kind of teased the idea of us doing a whole episode about all the times Chevy Chase's been a dick to people. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't know. We never followed up with it because I was like, oh, maybe that makes us sound like dick, pointing out how he was a dick. I don't want to. Are we the baddies situation type of thing?
But I mean, yeah, if you've ever read like the Live from New York oral history book, it's wild because it's like pretty much every decade it's like Chevy Chase comes around and pisses off a new SNL cast.
Yeah, it's wild.
And the things he's done, and yeah, it's so, I mean, you know, will this make us develop more sympathy for Chevy Chase as a person? Or will it make us dislike him even more? I don't know. Yes. I don't know. So
yeah, sympathy for the devil. We'll see.
Yeah. Try to keep as open of a mind about it as we can, I guess.
Absolutely. So. And so join us next week for I'm Chevy Chase and You're Not. And but until then, you can follow us on all the socials on Blue Sky at SNL Nerds. You can listen to this madness on our YouTube page, non-productive.com. We have our episodes there, wherever you listen to podcasts, any all your streaming services. Jesus Christ.
Beautifully said.
Wow. And as always, you can follow me on all the socials at Darren Credible, D-A-R-I-N, Credible.
And you can follow me on all the socials at TrumbleCon, TrumbullCon, and the word comic. Next week, I'm Chevy Chase and you're not. So we'll check it out. We'll figure out what that's all about. Mm-hmm. But until then, nerds out!
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.